Welcome to Cleveland Clinic Health Talk Podcasts, featuring presentations by leading Cleveland Clinic physicians and medical experts. Today's speaker, Dr. Kim Stearns, presents hip replacement, what's new and what's for you.
I'm going to talk a little bit about hip replacement. I treat arthritis of the hip and knee, and pretty much everything that Dr. Richter said about the knee holds true for treating arthritis in the hip. And we do all the things that she said for the hip. We don't give a lot of injections into hip. Cortisone doesn't work as well in the hip as it does in the knee. And and the gel shots are not FDA approved for the hip, but there are instances where we give them. I'm a surgeon, but surgery is a last resort. So, you know, my job is to try to keep you out of my operating room. But when all else fails, we do have a very, very good solution, and that's what I'm going to talk about. So Dr. Richter talked a little bit about diagnosing arthritis and what is arthritis, and I'm just going to add a few more comments to that. She showed you the picture of a knee, and this is also a picture of the knee. And what's important to know about cartilage is cartilage is synonymous with cushion, and this is the end of your femur, and you can see the white, smooth, shiny cartilage. And why is that important? Well, you really just get one chance. Once the cartilage is gone, it's very difficult, if not impossible, to put it back, and that's why preserving our joints is so important. But in a knee and in a hip and in every joint on the end of the bone is this cartilage lining, and cartilage is very smooth and slippery, and it has no friction, and it's like dropping an ice cube in a frying pan. And when you wear and cartilage has no nerves. When you wear away the cartilage, underneath the cartilage you expose bone, and bone is very different than cartilage. Bone is very rough and very raw and has a lot of nerve endings. And so keep this picture in mind. This is a healthy, normal joint, and this is what an arthritic joint looks like. So you can see that it's not white. The cartilage, the white stuff's gone, and underneath it is the bone, and it's the yellow stuff. And its bone is very hard, and it's like going from the ice cube in a frying pan to two pieces of sandpaper rubbing against each other. Bone is very, when bone touches bone, it's like two live wires touching each other. So that's why it's important and to understand this is what arthritis is. So people come in and they'll say, my hip hurts. It's not, it's my job to make sure it's not tendonitis or bursitis, but to truly have a diagnosis of arthritis, you have to have the cartilage wear away and expose the bone. If you've ever been to the orthopedic surgeon, you know that we like to get x-rays. Who's brave enough to raise their hand? Who here has a hip replacement? So there's a bunch of you. So this is an x-ray of a pelvis, and on the right hip, you can see the round ball that sits in the round socket, and there's a space between the ball and the socket. And that's not an air space, that's a cartilage space. And cartilage is synonymous with cushion. And we get a lot of information by looking at these x-rays. And on the other side, there's still some space, but it's much thinner. So that's a hip that's starting to wear. And this is a hip that's pretty much destroyed. There's no more space. The ball is not round. The hip is flat. You can see that the bone gets very dense once you wear away the cartilage and you put all the stress on the bone. The bone gets hardened and it's almost like marble. And it's like trying to turn a square peg in a round hole. And that's very painful when you're trying to walk. So how do total joints work? Well, people are under the impression sometimes that when they have a total joint replacement that we just chop out their whole joint. We just chop out the whole thing, and that's just not the case. Actually, what we remove is very little, and when we do a hip replacement, what we take out is just the ball of the hip, And the ball of the hip is about the size of a cue ball on a pool table. So that's really all of the tissue that we're removing from your body when we do a hip replacement. And then we put in a new shell, a new socket in the pelvis, and a stem goes down your femur and has a new ball. And so we basically just excise the arthritic part of the joint. And what we put in is a low friction, no friction prosthesis that is fixed to the bone. So this is an x-ray of a hip replacement, and you can see, who has my models? Are they still in the room? Okay, so the stem that you're holding, the long part, goes right down the middle of the bone, and the ball goes on top of it, and then the small round piece, the shell, is fixed to your pelvis, and that's basically what we do. We remount the socket, we put a new stem down the shaft of your femur, and when we put it all together, it makes a new joint. So what are these made out of? Well, if you have a knee replacement and you have a nickel allergy, you have to use a special prosthesis, but our hips are pretty much made out of titanium, and they are very, very strong. They have a coating on the outside of them that the bone will grow into. The socket has a mesh, metal mesh on it, and it has tens of thousands of little pores, and your bone will grow right into it. And the stem has a variety of coatings. The one that I use has something called hydroxyapatite, which is something that the dentists use when they use implants in your mouth. And it has a porous surface, and your bone will grow right into it. When we first started doing these in the 60s and early 70s, we put them in with cement, and we found out that over time, just like the cement on the sidewalk will chip and break and loosen, the cement in your hip would do the same thing after 8 or 10 or 12 years. And so about 15 years ago, we really stopped using cement for most of our hip replacements, and now we have these coatings on the end of the bone so that it grows into the bone. These will last you for decades. The ball that we use typically is made out of ceramic, and the lining in the socket is a very high density plastic. So I have discussions with people about having a hip replacement all the time, and invariably somebody will come in and they'll say, do you do an anterior approach? And the approach, when you hear that term, because I get asked a lot, at least once a day when somebody's going to have a hip replacement, they'll ask me that. They don't really know what it means, but they ask. It really signifies where you make your incision. There's a couple different ways to get into a hip. There's an anterior approach, there's a lateral approach, and there's a posterior approach. And it's really, again, the location of the incision, it's the philosophy of the surgeon, it's what the surgeon experience is. There's risks and benefits to both procedures for those of you that have had a hip replacement or those of you that are contemplating a hip replacement. And the bottom line is that there is no long-term difference in whether you have an anterior approach or a posterior approach. The doctors that do the anterior approach will sometimes tell you that your recovery is quicker, but long-term studies show that that's just not the case. So the bottom line is that be comfortable with your surgeon, and if you have a good rapport with the surgeon and you like the surgeon, you have to trust that he knows what he's doing. And don't focus so much on wanting a doctor that does a specific approach, because long-term results, whether you have an anterior or posterior approach in a surgeon that is comfortable doing a hip replacement and qualified, you're going to have an excellent result no matter what. There's a different procedure than a hip replacement called a hip resurfacing, and That's also a surgeon philosophy. It's a different way to put a new surface on a hip. You don't take off the whole ball. You just resurface and reshape the ball. You don't have a stem, and I have an x-ray to show you in a minute, but it's just a different way to put a new surface in a hip. Some people feel that done properly, it can be a better option for younger males that like to be very active and work out. Just this past year, the question by the FDA was raised that it may not be the best option for women, so we're looking into that. It is a very difficult procedure to do, and there's only a few surgeons in town that do them. Most of us at the Cleveland Clinic do hip replacements. I do have one partner, Dr. Brooks, that is well known for hip resurfacings. And if there's a patient that sees us that wants to have a hip resurfacing, typically we'll refer them to Dr. Brooks. You may wait 6 or 8 months to get in to see him, if that is what you want, then he's the one to do it. So the x-ray shows on the left hip, this is a total hip replacement, again with the socket and the ball and the stem that goes down the middle of the femur, and a hip resurfacing where you do put a socket in and then you just shape the ball, and the metal part is hollowed out and it goes over the ball and has a very small stem, and it preserves bone. My hip replacement patients are the happiest people that I take care of. And if you've had a knee replacement and then you need to have your hip replaced, you're much happier the second time around than if you have a hip replacement and then you have to have your knee done. Knees are miserable pain, but the people that have had the hip replacement can tell you that it's not that bad. And most people, after I do it, come back after 2 or 3 weeks and say they don't know why they waited so long once they see how good they feel. As I said before, you can expect that today's modern implants to last for decades. I'm old enough that I feel like when I'm putting these in my patients that I'll be long retired before my younger partners are going to have to come back and redo them in 20 plus years. We have streamlined this so well that our patients are out of the hospital usually on day one or day two, and they're usually off of crutches in a week or two. My patients, I always have a discussion with them about what they can't do because their arthritis is so bad, and we make it a goal for them to get back to doing some of those things, whether it's just walking in the neighborhood or going to the mall or golfing or riding their motorcycle, or I have HIPAA would not allow me to tell you who this person is, but I have a well-known local TV personality that kickboxes, and she's afraid to come back and see me because she knows I'm going to yell at her, and every time she sees me at a social event she runs the other way. But I do know that she works out like a fiend and she kickboxes. I have an 82-year-old man that plays softball. He can't play the outfield, and he gets a pinch runner after he swings the bat, but he can play first base and he pitches, and he's still out there on Sunday mornings in the spring or summer playing, and he's very proud of that. You have to modify your activities. If you're a tennis player, I may tell you that you can play doubles tennis, not singles tennis, after you have your hip replaced, but you can certainly work out, you can ride your bike. If you're a skier, you can ski, but I tell you to stay off the blacks, stay off the bumps, and to ski the greens and the blues. Most people will tell you that it's life-changing. And I'm going to stop there.
Thank you for listening to Cleveland Clinic Health Talk Podcasts. For more information, please visit our website at clevelandclinic.org/health.